right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Again, thank you to Matt Verderam in the previous hour, talking some Chiefs football, talking some kickoff rules, and also talking Norma Hunt. The news came down late yesterday afternoon into the early evening that Norma Hunt had passed away, and the statements by so many different clubs, not just NFL, but MLS, so many different clubs offering their condolences to the Hunt family for the passing of Norma Hunt, who did mean a great deal to the city. And, you know, we talk about Lamar Hunt, we talk about the Hunt family, and Norma's been there essentially every step of the way for this Chiefs franchise, and the only woman to attend every single Super Bowl. And thankfully, the last Super Bowl she attended was won by the Kansas City Chiefs. She also was the first person to kiss the actual Lamar Hunt trophy given to the Chiefs when they beat the Tennessee Titans. While I wanted Jim Nance to hand the trophy to Norma, he handed the trophy to Clark, who immediately grabbed the trophy and then gave it over to his mom, Norma Hunt, who kissed the trophy. So the first ever actual Lamar Hunt trophy that the Chiefs won, first person to kiss that, was Norma Hunt. And influences not only with the NFL, but with Major League Soccer, with tennis, Worlds of Fun, with so many different things that the Hunt family has been about. And Norma Hunt's been there every step of the way. And I mentioned with Matt Verderam the fellowship program that she did a couple of years ago for females in sports, having them get more involved in the NFL and not just in, you know, in the actual scouting department, in training camp, in drafting and combines and pro days and going through all of those. And two of the alumni from that, Ashley Smith, is now working with the league office and NFL manager of player engagement. And Madison Aponte is working with the Chiefs as an assistant in player personnel. So those are two women who had doors in the NFL opened up to them because of an initiative by Norma Hunt to get more females involved. And it's not just getting more females involved, because when they announced it, the shocking reactions from some of, well, why don't you just hire the most qualified people? You know, just why? Just right. But opportunities need to be there. These particular ladies would not have had the opportunity to even interview for said job. They might have been the most qualified, but nobody would have known who they were if they were just working in the college ranks. Are they then going to get a job in the NFL? It's like, well, no, I was working as assistant athletic director for the tennis team at this college. Now I want to work in player personnel at the NFL level. Ooh, we're going to hire the most qualified. Well, now you go through this fellowship program. You pick up all of these different things. You learn. You now throw that into your background with all of the other things you've done in your resume and become more well-rounded, and you get an opportunity there. So they probably were the most qualified person, because they actually got a chance to interview and be viewed as on an equal footing with these others there. So she's opened up the door in that realm as well. So it's certainly a sad day when the matriarch and the person who has been there with Lamar every step of the way in the Hunt family, we lost Lamar in 2006 and Norma yesterday. So yeah.
Very cool, though, that she did get to experience all this. Has to be such a phenomenal... Seeing your legacy culminate in that has to be so fulfilling, because you always want to see your dreams come true, and she was able to see her dreams come true before she passed. That has to be such a phenomenal experience. So, very different, but I want to bring up, too, just, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame with Buck O'Neill. My biggest gripe is when they don't induct the players who you know are going to be inducted in their lifetime. But, for example, Norma was able to see her footprint and her legacy carried out in real time, and I think that has to be such a glorious experience.
So a couple of things to that. They finally won the Lamar Hunt Trophy. So they won three of those, you know, in the 4 years, two Lombardi trophies, and Kansas City awarded a World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, with her and Lamar going to the World Cup in the 60s and sort of falling in love with soccer, and then the MLS and getting an MLS squad here in Kansas City. And because the Chiefs have been such a well-run and successful franchise for such a long time, and part of that because of the Hunts, or a big part of that because of the Hunts, in that you marry those, that part of the foolish club that eventually gets into the NFL for the NFL and football as we know it today, and the Chiefs with Arrowhead Stadium out there, and the love of soccer, and bringing soccer and investing so much into the MLS, and then Kansas City becoming this much of a lover of soccer, that those two things, now the World Cup. Without Lamar and Norma, we would not be talking about the World Cup in Kansas City coming in a few years. That would not be happening, which is also pretty cool. It's part of the legacy. So when the World Cup's here in Kansas City, we'll also remember the Hunt family for bringing the Dallas Texans to Kansas City and then investing in the MLS and Kansas City Wizards and on into sporting and the Chiefs staying around and being a well-run organization to not then leave the city or go somewhere else or what have you, that those two things sort of coming together. So it's a sad day, but also a celebration of what was a remarkable life for Norma Hunt. So 913-912-4810. She witnessed two Super Bowls and three Lamar Hunt trophies. Travis Kelce was on the Run It Back podcast last week, which is Michelle Beadle and Chandler Parsons, and I can't remember who the other two that are on that Run It Back podcast. But Travis Kelce was on the podcast, and he was on it for about 30 minutes, and they discussed a lot of different things, most of them not NFL-related. His relationship with LeBron, being a Cavs fan, hanging out with Chandler Parsons, playing golf, a lot of different things they talked about. But they also asked, hey, you know, speaking of the Golden State Warriors that you were just discussing and being a Cavs fan, is Kansas City a dynasty? Can they be a Warriors-type dynasty? So here's Travis Kelce weighing in on if he thinks this Chiefs team that he is on right now should be considered a dynasty.
I would say, yeah, where the Kansas City is has been a dynasty for quite a while, And obviously I'm biased. Excuse me, I'm biased to that. But I think that what Coach Reed has done since he's been here in terms of winning, in terms of the playoff runs and all the division championships, and the AFC title appearances, then obviously the Super Bowls. We're 100% a dynasty, but when you put it up against what the Warriors have done, obviously we don't have as many championships right now. So we got some work to do. We're on an uphill battle, especially when you talk about what the Warriors have been able to do. Unfortunately, I've seen quite a few daggers from the Golden State Warriors, being a Cavs fan throughout my day, but yeah, Cavs in seven anyways. But I think at the end of the day, Patty Mahomes finds a way to overtake, what is it? They got four championships?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think Pat Mahomes is definitely going to find a way to get more than four championships. Hopefully I'm still along for the ride by the time he gets there.
So along with Michelle Beadle, it's Sham Sharani and Eddie Gonzalez and Chandler Parsons are the four that host that show. The Warriors dynasty, can the Chiefs be that? The Warriors have four trophies in 8 years. They've been to six NBA finals. So 4-2 in those NBA finals over 8 years. Can the Kansas City Chiefs, over the next 4 years, win two more and get to it and win at least four? I don't think you got to go 4-2 and go to six to be like the Warriors dynasty. It doesn't mean, they didn't say, can you be better than the Warriors dynasty? Can you be the NFL like what we just saw with the Warriors and the dynasty and the NBA winning four championships in 8 years and going to six NBA finals and what? Five in a row that they went to NBA finals. It's not going to happen with Super Bowls, but, you know, because one game sample size as opposed to seven game series.
Yeah, that was my point right there. NBA and NFL is so different because in the NFL, anything can happen in one game, especially when there's a good team versus a great team, right? Because in the playoffs, you're at least going to be a good team. It's a good team versus a great team. NBA finals, you have a seven game sample size. Typically, not always, but typically, over seven games, the great teams find ways to beat the good teams. That's going to be way more difficult in the NFL, but I also don't think it's impossible for the Chiefs to win two more in 4 years. Again, I don't think the actual going to the Super Bowl that many times, but again, that would be three Super Bowl appearances, and winning two would be the same thing, correct?
Well, yeah. Because
they've been to three. They've won two.
Yep.
So they could go to three and win two.
That'd be
again,
four and two.
That'd still be
the exact same thing over 8 year span.
It's still absurd. I don't see Kevin Durant walking in the door anytime soon. Yeah, frankly, if you want to make the same case, maybe it was Tyreek Hill who left.
Yeah.
That was your Kevin Durant, if you will. The piece you didn't need, but it sure helped. It didn't hurt.
Right.
It was fine.
Yeah. They had just lost the finals when they got Kevin Durant, and then they won the next two, and then Durant was injured in the finals that they end up losing. That was when Durant came, was it game four, game five, whichever game he came back in the NBA finals and then ruptured his Achilles.
Yeah.
That was the only game in which he played in the NBA finals. They lost that NBA finals to the Raptors. So they went 2-2 without Kevin Durant, did the Warriors overall dynasty.
Sure.
They went 2-0. With Kevin Durant when he actually played in the NBA Finals with them. So there is not a player out there that would come in and be the best player on this Chiefs team better than Patrick Mahomes, whereas Durant entered that and then was the best player and then MVP of the NBA Finals, etc.
So if we're looking at an eight-year time span, the Chiefs are actually smack dab in the middle with two wins in 4 years and three appearances, right? So that's the halfway point of what the Warriors dynasty was. Again, this is a tall order for Kansas City, but I don't think it's out of the equation. But I want to bring up this to you. Do you think, because Travis Kelce was adamant that the Chiefs are in the midst of a current dynasty. So that, to my ears, says if we're to end right now, you would look back and say this was a Chiefs dynasty.
I think it's a small run dynasty. I don't think it's a, like, you look back at the most dynastic teams that in the history of sports and in the NFL. I don't think people would land on the Chiefs because it's a five-year run. And it's two Super Bowls in 5 years, but we've seen teams have a couple of Super Bowls in that span, and it wouldn't be like, hey, this team, you know, is a dynasty. What I believe makes the Chiefs, even if it's a smaller short-term one, is the fact that in that 5 years, they've played for the championship of their conference all 5 years. They're 3-2 in those games, and they're 2-1 in the Super Bowl. Because they beat the Eagles is the only reason why they're now in the conversation.
Yes.
If they were 1-2 in the Super Bowl, I don't think it would be a question. It'd be like, it was a great run, but you got to win multiple Super Bowls to be considered that. I think over the next 3 or 4 years, if they win one more, if you get 3 in 8 years and you throw in all the AFC championships and you also throw in the fact that you went to another Super Bowl, if you're like 3-1, or maybe you get to two more Super Bowls, win one. If you know, you go 3-5,
yeah,
or 3-2, I should say, 3-2 in an 8 year span in the Super Bowl, yeah, you're a freaking dynasty because you would have won three championships and gone to five of them and then played in a number of other, you know, conference championships. I don't think there would be any question at that point. It's a matter of, to me, this run being viewed as like a true dynasty nationally and historically, what they do the next 3 years.
To me, it always comes down to the third. Once you get that third ring in any sport, really, that's when I think you become
the
conversation.
What's the time frame, though, for that third one? Is it 10 years?
Well,
is
it's tough because Kobe Bryant, if you even say the Lakers and their dynasty, if you will, it kind of evolved from the first one where they had the three-peat, right? What was it 98, 90? No, it was
01. 01, 2, and 3? Or is 0, then 1 and 2?
Oh, whatever. The 3-year one there, right?
Yep.
And then they also had the two eventually with Paul Gasol.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was the dynasty? Was it the three ones at the beginning or the two? Or was it the all-encompassing Lakers 2000s dynasty? Like, there's ways you can look at this, but to me it always comes down to you have to have that third. Once you get that third ring, that's when you're in the conversation of the pantheon, if you will, of dynasties.
The Patriots became such a prolonged dynasty because of the second three Super Bowls in 5 years.
Yeah.
Because they had gone 9 years without winning one. They had won the 3 out of 4, winning a Super Bowl, missed the playoffs, Super Bowl, and then 9 years before they won another one. They went to two Super Bowls in that time, but it was 9 years before they won their next Super Bowl.
Sure.
But then when they won that one, they won 3 in 5 years, also going to a Super Bowl in that and losing. a Super Bowl along the way. So they went to three of four Super Bowls after 9 years before that, winning three of four. It created this long 17, 18-year dynasty of the Patriots and winning the division every single year and things like that. That's part of the whole thing, is not only dominating your division, but dominating the conference, dominating in winning championships. That's what creates the Patriots. For if the Patriots didn't have that second run, it would have been an awesome four-year stretch, but then they missed the playoffs before, and then they, I don't even know if they made it. The next couple of years, they made the playoffs, but then they went to the Super Bowl the year
after that. Matt Castle, baby.
And then the year after that is when they missed the playoffs because of Tom Brady and Matt Castle. But they had lost the Super Bowl the year before when they were undefeated and ended up going 18-1 that year. But the next run of winning Super Bowls makes them an all-time dynasty that would last from the early 2000s to the late 2010s, and Tom Brady being a big part of that. I don't know that if Patrick Mahomes will have that same career arc to where it's the 2020s and then also coming back in the 2030s and winning three or four. That'd be badass if he ends up doing that. But I think the next two or three years for this Chiefs team, do they get to another Super Bowl? Can they win another Super Bowl in the next 3 years? Also, what are they doing in the playoffs? Because that to me is where they can. So the question would be like, do you need four championships to be compared to like a Warriors dynasty in the NBA? Because the Warriors lost in the NBA Finals twice, won four of them, but outside of that, didn't even play for the conference championship. Yeah. Outside of going to the final. Now, they went to the finals 5 years in a row, but then before and after that, they didn't even play for the conference championship before that. They missed the playoffs twice.
Was that with Baron Davis, Monta Ellis?
but with injuries, though, I mean, they missed the playoffs twice with Clay and Steph and, different injuries. But again, that happens. Like when you're looking at a dynasty overall, like you go to five straight finals, you go 3-2 in those finals. You've got three championships and then you miss the playoffs back to back years. Then you go to the NBA finals and win it. Then you lose in the semis the year after that. And now the question is, like, are they going to be close to what they were moving forward? You've got your GM that's out. Draymond Green, could opt out and may end up somewhere else. And that, dynasty sort of breaking up. Do you have to win four if you've played for so many conference championships like the Chiefs have? And if you win the division every single year, and if you never miss the playoffs and are in a chance to win a Super Bowl, do you have to win four? Or can three suffice in 8 years with a number of Super Bowls and then conference championship appearances and winning the AFC West and never missing the playoffs when the Warriors missed two playoffs in that run?
Yeah, I think three. Again, three is my number because the NFL is so much more difficult once you get to the playoffs than the NBA. The one versus seven, the small sample size, I always just stick on three. Right now, the Chiefs are in a AFC domination, an NFL domination, but again, you got to look back. It's always that third one that makes a dynasty. And what's going to be interesting is Mahomes is going to be here. But Travis Kelce kind of alluded to it when he goes, I hope I'm there for a little bit. But he also understands Mahomes is going to be here for hopefully another 10, 15 years, right? We're hoping 10 years probably is what we're hoping for.
I'm actually hoping for 20, but you go
37
ahead.
37 years.
You be pessimistic all you want.
He can be looking like Santa Claus with a ZZ Top with a big beard.
Sterling Holmes is saying that Patrick will not play till he's 48, and I just don't understand why you're coming on the show to be such a negative Nancy.
He will play longer than Julio Franco did, that's what we're going with. But the point is, there's going to be different iterations of this team. We saw it with Brady and the Patriots. And we're going to eventually see it with the Chiefs. We don't even know who the next stars are going to be once Chris Jones is gone, once Travis Kelce is retired. But Mahomes is still going to be here. And that's what makes the elongated dynasty. And again, what the Patriots went through, if you want a game plan that the Chiefs might look like, they probably will have a four-year stretch where they're not the best team in the NFL. Right?
I mean, because, shut your mouth.
Well, no, but it is.
I know. If we're being realistic,
yeah, where their guys were gone, and then they had to get who back?
Yes.
It was Randy Moss, and then it was Wes Welker after that. They went through these
Edelman
rotations, and there's going to be a stretch in the middle where the Chiefs aren't going to hit on every single draft pick. When Kelce's gone and Chris Jones is gone, but Mahomes is still here, he'll carry you to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You'll still be playing for games, but there might be a stretch in there. And that's what's going to also define his legacy is Tom Brady always seemingly elevated his teams. Was it him? Was it Belichick? We'll see. But with Mahomes, he'll have that same stretch at some point, and it's probably going to be when Kelce retires because Tyreek Hill's gone. How much can he elevate everyone else? And we kind of saw with a Super Bowl win with MVS being wide receiver one in an actual playoff game.
Looking through here to the Chiefs in Super Bowl 54 when they beat the 49ers. I'm counting five players not named Mahomes that were on that team that'll be on the team this year. The entire offense, the entire starting offense except for Kelce. Kelce sure. and Mahomes are the only starters of that Super Bowl championship team against the 49ers that are on this team right now. Because Hardman was on that team
sure.
and started, and he is not on the team anymore. He is a New York Jet. Sammy Watkins, the entire offensive line, obviously.
Was Nick Allegretti a rookie that year?
Nick Allegretti played in the game. Yeah. He played in the game. He played special teams, but he is part of that. Winchester. Three of those guys are special teamers. Butker, Winchester, and Allegretti at the time.
Yeah.
Were guys who were on special teams that are returning. Chris Jones, Derek Nnadi, and then you've got Kelce and Blake Bell.
The Belldozer.
That's the changeover. That's the turnover for a team that is the Super Bowl favorites that comes off another Super Bowl championship in a game in which Mecole Hardman didn't play in. So even if you say, well, Hardman was on that team and was on... Yeah, Hardman did not play in the Super Bowl, unfortunately. He gets injured against the injured early against the Titans and then re-injures against the Bengals. But that's the turnover. Like, when they traded Tyreek Hill to me, I had called it the next phase of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. The second they traded Tyreek Hill, because we had wondered for a number of years, man, what do the Chiefs look like without Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce? Ooh, shut up. I don't want to think about that. Well, we had to think about it. And then we watched it, and they won the Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill. I don't want to think about what life will be like without Travis Kelce, because it's different saying taking one of those guys away versus taking both of them away. But I'm going to guess that Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs will have an opportunity to win one. Hopefully they win one or two, but they'll be pretty damn good offensively when Travis Kelce has retired and moved on. I don't know what that iteration will look like and how they'll do it. I know how they'll do it right now, which is why I don't want to think about life without Travis Kelce, but I also didn't want to think about life without Tyreek Hill either. And it's been perfectly fine.
I think the biggest storyline we're glossing over when it comes to Golden State and the Chiefs and the comparison as well. Golden State was able to tank 1 year and draft first overall. Chiefs aren't going to have that luxury. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, they didn't. Was it first overall with James Wiseman, right? Or was that
Wiseman
second?
I think they picked him second overall.
Well, the point was they got a top three draft pick. Now, they didn't hit on James Wiseman, but they had the opportunity to draft top three. That's not going to happen with the Kansas City Chiefs. At least we hope it's not going to happen. That would be befuddling if the Chiefs were ever drafting top three.
That would be
but seriously,
that would suck.
But that's
something crazy did happen if that happens.
But
yes,
that's
you're right.
A pretty big storyline I think we're glossing over is they were able to reload to an extent by drafting top three. Chiefs don't have that opportunity.
Yeah. James Wiseman was the... He was the second overall pick.
Because it was Anthony Edwards, I think, that went first to Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken.
Of course. Who did they get back when they traded? I don't even want to look. Don't even care who they got back when they moved on from James Wiseman and they traded him. So don't care who they ended up getting back. Doesn't really matter. I know they got a world championship the next year. He was on that championship team.
He was.
So they had traded. Actually, you know what? They traded him at the trade deadline this year.
Yes, correct.
The Warriors did. So
it was Gary Payton II, who was actually a valuable piece.
Yeah.
Two future second-round draft picks is what they got back.
Got Draymond in the second round. Future Draymond.
Think of drafting a dude second overall, and you got was Gary Payton a second-rounder or undrafted guy, and then two future second-rounders.
Yeah, I don't know that he was drafted. I'm not sure if he
adequately
was. Yeah. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. We'll talk a little bit more about the Kansas City Chiefs. Bill Barnwell and Mina Kimes on NFL Live weighed in on the Chiefs offseason. And what happened and the position that Brett Veach yet again has put this Chiefs team in. We'll take a timeout. We'll hear about that. And then also may address, again, real quick, the we talked a lot about Dave Tobe and the kickoff with Matt Derrick on Friday. But I do want to play the sort of conflicting parts that we heard from Dave Tobe on Thursday. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes hanging out. Drake, we head up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock, KSHB 41 Sports Director. Also get Learn Funniest Best from the weekend. Sterling's going to come up with his Learn Funniest Best on the fly. You've had a couple of hours notice now, so, you know, put you on notice that you have to notice of what we've noticed.
We're going to wing it. We're going to wing it.
Do it. Do that. What did you learn this weekend? Let me figure it out real quick. I'll tell you what I learned.
Tell everyone to pause. Tell everyone to pause for a little bit. Let me think.
Yes. Don't worry. You'll be second in learned, first in funniest, last in best. So, you know, you got some time to think of your best.
He is last best.
We did not save the best for last. We saved him to the last because...
You hope everyone turns off. You hope everyone's like, all right, we heard Jason's, both the Jason's. Don't got to listen to Sterling.
We heard Mick. We heard Drake. We heard Jason. Done. All right, 913-912-4810. NFL Live on Friday, hosted by one Field Yates, had Bill Barnwell and Mina Kimes, and they were weighing in on doing a series of different teams' offseason moves. And this one was about the Chiefs and the offseason moves they made. It starts with Bill Barnwell, and then Mina Kimes weighs in, and they talk about what the Chiefs were able to do and setting themselves up yet again to be Super Bowl favorites.
Field, something we've never seen a Super Bowl-winning team do before.
Let's
swap out both of their offensive tackles.
Never.
They let Orlando Brown leave, let Andrew Wiley leave. You bring in Jawan Taylor from the Jaguars, who you figured was going to move to the left side, but instead they signed Donovan Smith from the Buccaneers. I think they actually upgraded at tackle by going out and adding two veteran players who are going to be immediate solid starters on the outside of a very solid interior offensive line. And we know with Patrick Mahomes, all you have to do is give him time to throw. Remember that Super Bowl? That's the only time he's really looked bad in the postseason because there was nobody there to block for him. The Chiefs learned their lesson, had a good line last year, might have an even better line this year in front of the reigning MVP and reigning Super Bowl champion.
Change of tackle is really fascinating, not just because, as Bill said, it's unprecedented, which I didn't know for a Super Bowl champion. That's pretty wild. But as you guys remember, when the Chiefs signed Jawan Taylor, there was an assumption that he would replace Orlando Brown Jr. at left tackle. Then we learned, after they signed Donovan Smith from Tampa, that Taylor was going to play right tackle, which is great for the right side of the offensive line because I think he can be one of the best right tackles in football there. My question is whether Donovan Smith can get back playing at the level he was a few years ago, because last season was rough. Mm. He was incredibly penalized, had a lot of lapses in pass protection, and I think for Kansas City, you know, for him to play at least at the level of Brown, that would be the minimum. Now, I think that Donovan Smith is going to benefit from playing for Kansas City.
Yes.
He gets to play. He goes from, in Tampa, playing next to, frankly, what was one of the worst interior offensive lines in football on account of all the injuries, to a group with Joe Tooney on the left side, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, that I think most people, maybe behind the Eagles, would have as the best interior offensive line in football. So perhaps he'll hold a little bit less if he knows that he's not on an island. I also think the difference in these offenses will really help him in pass protection. The run game is very different from Tampa's, which is a very just straightforward power run game. It's more diverse. I think he might be on the move a bit more. And, you know, I think the scheme also, which is, of course, very dependent on RPOs, can help him too.
Absolutely. And I think he's going to have more help on the other side as well, because the Chiefs are a team that uses a ton of two or more tight end sets. That was one of their big changes last year, moving on from Tyreek Hill. One of the ways they adapted went from using two or more tight ends 29% of the time to more than 44% of the time. And it worked out just fine for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, who was second in the NFL in QBR behind Jalen Hurts, who was awesome as well, when they teamed up with two or more tight end sets. So, of course, having Travis Kelce as one of those tight ends, kind of a cheat code, to be fair. But even though the names aren't necessarily big, just having those bodies on the field forces the defense to make some choices about how they're going to defend it, creates mismatches in the passing game, and gives those tackles a little more help as you're blocking for a player in Patrick Mahomes, who he likes to extend plays a few seconds here or there if he can.
But doesn't it feel like this could be one of the Chiefs' secret weapons over the next decade or so, is that it's not going to always work out, right? But they're going to be able to acquire players, oftentimes for relative bargains, who are just going to look a whole lot better because of the environment they're playing in Kansas City. I expect that to be the case with Donovan Smith.
So a number of things that Bill Barnwell touched on there, and also Mina Kimes. I also didn't know this was the first time a Super Bowl champion had replaced both tackles from the year before. The Chiefs ended up having two different tackles the year after they won the Super Bowl in the next Super Bowl, but that wasn't because they replaced them, it was because both guys ended up getting injured. I do love the way that Bill Barnwell phrased it when he said, they let Orlando Brown walk. They let Andrew Wiley walk because of this, you know, conversation of like, well, Orlando Brown went to the Bengals and, you know, especially with Tyler Boyd last week with we won up the Chiefs by getting Orlando Brown from them. Well, no, because as Bill Barnwell said there, they let Orlando Brown walk. They did. They could have re-signed him. They chose not to. Once he turned down the contract, they moved on to somebody else, and they moved on to Juwan Taylor, and saying that, look, this could be a better offensive line this year than it was a year ago. With the tackles the way that they play, they're going to be they better be better at right tackle if Juwan Taylor plays there. And what Mina Kimes brought up, I thought was interesting, is how bad Donovan Smith was last year. Is he going to be improved this year because of simply who he's playing next to and the scheme that he is playing in? Where Phil Yates says, this feels like it's going to be a theme that players who might have struggled join the Chiefs, the scheme, players around them, Patrick Mahomes, you know, one-year prove-it deal, and then they go and they play well and they move on. Juju Smith-Schuster ends up getting that contract with the New England Patriots. But looking through at the left guards, because Shaq Mason played right guard for the Bucs. So left guards for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Nick Leverett actually graded out pretty well last year with a run blocking grade of or a pass blocking grade of 71. Run blocking was 56 grade at Pro Football Focus. But Luke Godecki, who also played left guard, as there was, you know, a number of different guys ended up playing left guard next to Donovan Smith. It wasn't like, hey, Joe Tooney is now your left guard. He had a pass blocking grade of 46 and a run blocking grade of 47. So when he played, you had a really bad left guard that was playing next to Donovan Smith. So maybe he did think he was out on an island where maybe the Chiefs can protect him a little bit more with Joe Tooney, one of the best left guards in the game, and one of, if not the best, interior offensive lines in the game with, as Mina Kimes said, the Philadelphia Eagles. So do the Chiefs go into the offseason and get better at offensive line by letting Andrew Wiley and Orlando Brown, their starting tackles from a year ago, walk? We'll find out. A lot of that depends on Donovan Smith. But an interesting point on the just that offensive line, how in flux it was throughout the season last year for the Bucs, and playing next to some left guards that were interchangeable.
You can take a positive or negative
for
outlook
sure
on this. There's definitely no wrong way to look at it. If you want to look glass half full, the way you do it is, not only was Donovan Smith injured a good point of last year and he kept playing through it, you mentioned the left guard situation. Look at what happened last year. Orlando Brown Jr. was playing his best football when Joe Tooney was there. Late in the year, the last, 10 games of the year, he looked damn good. I will still say this, and if Chiefs fans are going to yell at me, outside of one horrible half against Jacksonville in the playoffs, the last 10 games that Orlando Brown Jr. was here, he looked good. Besides the one game Joe Tooney missed against the Bengals. He was brutal that game, right? I mean, he was a sieve. So there is something to having a non-perpetual moving left guard. You have to have your same guy there. And we always wonder, at least I do, with Eric Fisher. How good would have Eric Fisher been if his left guard was the same dude throughout his entire career, or at least a talented guy his entire career here in Kansas City? We won't know that. But I do think there's something to that. If you want to take a negative approach, Donovan Smith, he's getting older. Was this the year he just fell off? Again, I don't think it's really a bad one-year deal in the grand scheme of things. A one-year, was it $3 million base, up to $9
million? Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, Orlando Brown Jr. was a good left tackle, but he was not a game-changing left tackle. They had to use Jerick McKinnon to chip him like in the playoffs. Like, if there is a drop-off, it's not going to be one so substantial the Chiefs can't overcome it. What it comes down to is the cost acquisition of Juwan Taylor and Donovan Smith compared to Andrew Wiley and Orlando Brown Jr. That's what it comes down to, is the cost acquisition of those two guys.
Absolutely. Because, look, Juwan Taylor's costing a lot of money, so if he's going to play right tackle, he'd better be much improved than what Andrew Wiley was. And I thought Andrew Wiley was fine last year. He's a fine right tackle. But you don't pay $20 million to Juwan Taylor for him to be a fine right tackle. You pay him that much money to be one of the best right tackles in the game. And one of the things we talked about a couple of weeks ago is, you know, look at the evolution of the pass rusher, the edge rusher in the NFL. The evolution has gone from going up against the left tackle to now the premier pass rushers line up against the right tackle in the NFL. And the guys the Chiefs are going up against line up against the right tackle. The Max Crosbys, the Boses, the Von Millers, Khalil Max. Now, when he's on the field with Bosa at the same time, somebody's got to line up against the left tackle. But when only one of them played, so they've had some different injuries, when only one of them was out there, they lined up against the right tackle. Max Crosby lines up against the Max Crosby lined up against the right tackle. Von Miller in his career, 80% lining up against the right tackle in his career. Like, that's where your premier pass rushers are coming from. So it used to be like blindside, those best. Well, now your best pass protecting offensive lineman, put him on the right side, Juwan Taylor. It doesn't mean that you need to have somebody or can just have somebody who sucks on the left side. But it's a good point about the game in which Joe Tooney missed against the Cincinnati Bengals, what Orlando Brown was in that game, which also sort of interesting that Bengals fans are excited about Orlando Brown when they've seen their team beat him a number of times, beat Orlando Brown, and that's who they were attacking. It's just weird that a team would be like, let's attack Orlando Brown, and then go to the offseason, they sign him and go, it's all fixed. We got it. Our offensive line is so much better. We got the guy that we used to game plan against to go and attack when we were going up against that particular team.
The one pushback I'll give to Juwan Taylor in his contract, I'm with you. He has to be an absolute.
He's got to be better
stud.
Than Wiley. I don't even care if all of that stuff, but he's got to be better than Wiley.
But much better.
Yes.
$13 million per year better. That's what it comes down to an extent, because I understand that there's no longer this, you can have a weak right tackle. You're correct. Max Crosby, some of the elite guys, they go at right tackle. But the NFL has not cut up to this as far as right tackle contracts.
True.
Left tackle is so much paid, or the pay is so much different from left tackle to right tackle. Same thing at tight end. Travis Kelce, we all know, is the most underpaid player probably in the NFL. But you don't pay tight ends like wide receivers, even if, again, it's just as important. So paying a right tackle like a left tackle, there's some questions for me. Again, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying you can have a weak right tackle. But the rest of the NFL is not cut up there. So he better be as good, because he's getting paid just barely less than Lane Johnson, who, by the way, way more guarantees to Juwan Taylor than to Lane Johnson. So that's all I'm saying. He better be damn good just based on that contract.
See, and to me, I look at the overall pay towards the offensive line and that tackle position. So in 2019, when they won the Super Bowl, they had right around $30 million invested in Fisher and Schwartz. Might have been like 25. I think 15 for Fisher, 10 for Schwartz. Sure. So around $25 million. This year, if you're saying 20, if you're looking at annual average value, I actually think that might have even been against the cap, but regardless, annual average value, $20 million for Juwan Taylor and $3 million for Donovan Smith.
I think so we should probably say closer to nine. For the reason why I'm saying closer to nine, because if he's starting, he's probably going to hit the majority of his incentives.
If he gets to nine, if the Chiefs are sitting with $29 million for their tackles this year, then that means Donovan Smith hit all of the incentives, which would probably be a Super Bowl incentive in there as well.
Correct.
And you feel really damn good about the $29 million you spent at your tackle position, given how good the interior is.
And here's where it could have been. Just all things considered, we will never know, but Orlando Brown Jr. is getting paid, what, $16.5 million per year?
Mm-hmm.
And Wiley is at $7 million. So you're looking at about $23.5 million for those two guys, which would be their current contract. I'm not taking last year's contract, their current contract. $23.5 million is what we're probably looking at for those two guys. And then you're looking at this year where it's 20 and up to nine, which is probably going to be nine. So 29 to 23.5 million.
It'd be great if it was nine. But like the salary cap this year, for instance, Juwan Taylor is 5.8 and Donovan Smith is 2.7. So you're looking at $8.5 million total salary cap for your tackles, regardless of which side the bulk of that goes to, whether that be Juwan Taylor. And I think there is a little bit of a old school mentality of how could you possibly pay your right tackle that much money and not your left tackle, when we're seeing the right tackle is the one that's getting schemed against with the best edge rushers in football. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up this hour. Mick Schaefer joins us at 1 o'clock. More Zone right after this. We continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Drake. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up at 1 o'clock. And as we, you know, sort of talking about the cap disbursement, money disbursement on the offensive line, as we're, you know, discussing Juwan Taylor and Donovan Smith, as Bill Barnwell discussing the big moves from the Chiefs in the offseason and setting themselves up in what Bill Barnwell thinks will be a better offensive line than what was a year ago with Donovan Smith and Juwan Taylor. And just looking at, okay, so you're paying Juwan Taylor the annual average value of $20 million, 4 years, $80 million. There is an out after year three. So the cap hit this year is almost six. Cap hit next year is 24.7. Cap hit in 25 is 24.7. And then you can get out of that and save $20 million against the cap. And that would be going into his 29-year-old season if you're Juwan Taylor. One of the things that you can look at in terms of moving money around is when you get into 2025, that would be the first year of the free agency for Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, their final year being 2024. So if you re-signed them to a contract, the first year, their new contract would be 2025, when Juwan Taylor is almost $25 million against the cap. But we know the Chiefs, typically that first year is going to be a little bit cheaper. So that's how you would then be able to stagger it. We're paying $25 million against the cap for Juwan Taylor, but we're paying a combined $8 million for Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith if they go down that route. Then you move on from Juwan Taylor and his $25 million against the cap, and then Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith's cap starts to kick in a little bit more, and hopefully at that point you're replenishing with draft picks and other things at the tackle spot, and you can afford to pay some of those things. You're not going to be able to pay Juwan Taylor $25 million, a left tackle that you may find somewhere, and then Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith as the highest center and one of the higher paid guards in all of football. You're not going to be able to do that because Joe Tooney certainly won't be around in 25.
Correct.
It's just a matter of where you're going to allocate those resources.
Where do you land on Wanye Morris? Is there any chance you could see him being a starting tackle for the Chiefs at some point, maybe even after this year? Because Donovan Smith, in my opinion, is a one-year rental. There's still no long-term game plan at left tackle that it looks like. We thought it was Juwan Taylor. Talking with Tim Grunard, some of his sources in Jacksonville said, hey, he's going to be a damn good right tackle in the future. We see him being an absolute great right tackle. We don't see him as a left tackle. If that's the case, then there's still no long-term future at left tackle. It makes the Wanye Morris pick a little confusing, although I'm very high on Wanye Morris. I couldn't be more excited about him. Do you think there's a chance he plays left tackle? He played left tackle in college his freshman year.
Yeah,
at Tennessee.
It was rough.
All freshman SEC.
Yeah, I think there's a chance certainly that he could play left tackle. I think he's got the athleticism to be able to do that, and I think he's got great coaches with Andy Heck and Andy Reid to be able to develop that. Darian Kennard was also thought, you know, this guy can play right tackle. You know, he played right tackle at Kentucky. He can move down to guard. And he never developed into that with the coaching that we're talking about with Andy Heck and Andy Reid.
A little different. One at a much higher pedigree.
Oh, I agree.
He was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. The thing with Wanye Morris, he played in three systems.
Mm-hmm.
One at Tennessee, where he was all freshman as a left tackle, started all 12 games, five-star recruit out of high school. Oklahoma was there, and then obviously Lincoln Riley went to USC.
Yep.
So in another system. That's a lot for a, I don't care, for any player. Tackle, quarterback, wide receiver. I get it. It's not quarterback. But that's a lot for a young player, different system and schemes.
Yeah.
I have a lot of hope for Wanya Morris.
No, I do too, but I'm making the comparison of when I say, you know, he's got the good coaching and Andy Heck and Andy Reid, so he's got a chance to really maximize what his skill sets are for them to bring out the best and develop him. I then counter my own argument and point out, to play devil's advocate,
sure,
we also thought the same thing about Darian Kennard a year ago, that, look, this guy shouldn't have been in there in the fifth round. People think he can play guard, certainly, but the Chiefs think they've got a right tackle, and especially now with Andy Heck and Andy Reid. That never happened, but it doesn't mean the same things. Doesn't mean the same things will be missing from Wanya Morris. I think he's played left tackle before, so then there's a chance he could play that in the NFL. I don't know what the long-term deal is for the Chiefs, long-term plan at left tackle. We thought it was Juwan Taylor, like you said. If they still think it's Juwan Taylor, then why extend that one more year and not just move Juwan Taylor to the left side now?
Yeah.